Now, on this Invest Talk podcast, Justin Klein listens to your questions.
What does it mean when a company's share price falls to cheap prices and executive insiders don't buy more?
My question is, how much of your portfolio should you put into like ETFs and mutual funds?
I had a question about Dutch Bros. It's going to be a new IPO.
And provides unbiased answers.
I think the bet on the raw materials that go into electric cars are going to be far better than the electric car producers.
Invest Talk, across America and around the world. Your participation makes it unique. 888-99-CHART.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to Invest Talk. We are going through the second trading day of the month of December, and I'm excited to have you with me for this hour. I'm going to do my best, as usual, to help you navigate through an increasingly uncertain market environment as we head into 2022. And I think the action in the markets over the past couple of days is telling you that 2022 will look a lot different than 2021. Now, does that mean it has to be a bad year? No, but it's likely to be a more volatile year and a different year in leadership of the markets and more of a stock picker's market. And if you want to succeed in that market, you need to do a little extra legwork, a little extra time taken to understand the trends in the market, the trends in the economy, and adjust your portfolio accordingly. And that's what I'm here to help you with. Help you build your financial future and make smart decisions. Take that next step in your journey towards financial freedom. Now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls, 888-99-CHART. And during this hour, I'm going to operate with my mission statement, which is always independent thinking and shared success. No matter what I'm talking about, whether it is a particular stock, particular strategy, particular sector, I am here to give you the facts as I see them. I have a lot of systems up in front of me, a lot of data on various companies, on the economy, and all this helps inform me so that I can use my 20 plus years of investment experience to distill out the relevant information for you to make good sound money decisions. Now, the decision on a particular company or a sector or a strategy for you may be different than what is appropriate for somebody else as well. So you have to consider the pros and cons. That's why I try to lay out the pros and cons of everything that we are discussing on this show and highlight the risks and rewards. Now, I'm here to present all of this data to you without bias, just gives you the facts as I see them in front of me. So I encourage you to contact me with your finance and investment questions. And when you do that, you get to shape this show to your liking, the way you want it to flow. I have my vision of how I want the hour to flow, but you are my boss. And if you have a topic, you have anything you want to discuss, just interact with me right now during our live stream program from 4 to 5 Pacific time. Or if you're listening after hours, that's great too. You can still leave your message on our Invest Talk voice bank. Either way, the number always is the same, 888-99-CHART. Now let's grab our first listener question now.
Hi, this is Trent from Long Beach, and I own a mutual fund in my deferred compensation plan at work, DFIVX, D as in David, F as in Frank, I, V as in Victor, X. I'm just curious, for a few days now, there's been no news on it, and it's been frozen as far as any updates. I'm just curious, it's happened before on other things I've looked into. What does that mean when that happens on the when the stock stops moving as far as, and I can't find news on it? Thank you.
Well, what you're looking at is not a stock. It is a mutual fund. This is the DFA International Value Investor Class Fund. And Morningstar gives it 3 stars out of 5 bronze rating. So it's a decent fund. It's a large cap international value fund, which I think it's a good place to be right now, especially if the dollar's already run and value starting to kind of take over. And the better values across the globe are outside of the U.S. And so having some decent exposure there is a smart way to go. Now, remember, with a mutual fund, there is what is called the NAV. It doesn't trade throughout the day like an ETF or an individual stock. There is an ending price. And sometimes that ending price on the day is the ending price from the previous day. And you kind of seen that here over the past couple of days and even previous 2 days before that. It was basically a flat close. Now, part of that may have to do with a lot of their positions are overseas. And markets were closed over holidays, potentially. I'm not sure exactly. Obviously, this is spread out. But just really not nearly as much market movement overseas as you saw here in the U.S. on Friday. And so, once again, this is a mutual fund. So it has one closing price at the end of each day. And it is not uncommon to see back-to-back days with the same closing price. So that's why you didn't really see any movement. Nothing really to worry about. More just understanding whether you want to have this exposure or not. Is it a good fund or a bad fund? And I would say in this market in aggregate, I think this is a fairly good fund, especially in a defined benefit plan where you're not getting a lot of options. This is, you know, a pretty modestly above average fund with relatively low fees. That was the DFA International Value Fund. Now, my focus point today is based on the story behind this headline. CEOs and insiders have sold a record $69 billion of their stock. And some of this has to do with looming tax hikes, as well as lofty share prices. And that's encouraged many of them to take profits. But could this activity be a warning sign? We're going to look at that data and dig a little deeper. Also, there's some interesting trends in brick and mortar retail and e-commerce. And I'll give you a quick synopsis and we'll dig into it later. But basically, the cost to advertise online has become so expensive and the rents on brick and mortar stores have come down so much that it's now becoming a lot more economical to open up these retail stores, brick and mortar stores, as opposed to relying 100% on e-commerce and shifting investment from these companies more and more into the e-commerce space. So we've kind of, in some ways, according to this data, reached peak e-commerce, and we're going to dig into that a little bit more. Next, a report from the OECD talks about inflation, and we're going to look at what their report is saying and what that might mean over 2022 and what their expectations are for inflation next year and maybe even into 2023. So those are things that are on my mind, but ultimately I want to know what is on your mind. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, the S&P was up 64 points, about 1.5%, still did not close above yesterday's high. And I think that is going to be the new kind of line in the sand, is yesterday's high. If we close back above it, I still think we'll have a Santa Claus rally. As long as we stay kind of below the 4650, 4640 area on the S&P today, closed at 4577. So we're about 1%, 1.5% below those levels. And as long as we stay kind of below there, I actually expect some more volatility. But if we can kind of capture that number on a closing basis, 4650, call it, then I think we're going to start to see a continued grind higher. And a lot of this has to do with option flows, et cetera, and a lot of under the radar market mechanisms, market structure. And that's a lot of the reason why you saw big volatility after Friday's sell-off was because it was something called a gamma flip. And the gamma flip caused market makers to indiscriminately sell. And that's why you saw a lot of volatility. And we still remain in a zone, even after this rally, where a bit of downside is more likely. It doesn't mean it has to be a crash or anything, but we didn't overtake any major levels today, even though we got a nice bounce. So we'll see if we get some follow through tomorrow into the weekend, and that will be very interesting to see. Now, overall liquidity situation still remains, I think, relatively robust, and a lot of this worry has to do with the Fed tightening too aggressively. And I really don't think that is going to be the case. I think they're going to look at this recent market hiccup and they're going to continue on the path that they're at, not accelerating, maybe not decelerating their tapering path either. So we'll see where we close tomorrow, but definitely some nice progress in the market today. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. For investors, the need to remain vigilant really never ends. And that's why we're here to help you with your finance and investment questions at 888-99-CHART.
No two investors have an identical portfolio, so each investor will have different questions.
I guess I'm wondering how I should kind of diversify.
If the questions specific to your portfolio aren't being asked, your situation is not addressed.
And I wanted your thoughts on the cannabis market.
Steve Peasley and Justin Klein take InvestTalk listener questions each weekday during the program live stream in the 4 to 5 p.m. hour Pacific time. The InvestTalk Voice Bank never closes, so your questions are always welcome.
As a newer investor, my question concerns positions.
You have the right to remain silent, but why would you, when anything you ask will be used to help you create your financial freedom?
I think it'll probably go higher.
And so I would keep a tight stop on it.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Your objective is to work hard, plan well, and achieve financial freedom, right? You're in luck because Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your finance and investment questions. Call 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to James in Sonoma looking at Allstate.
Yeah, I was looking at Allstate. You know, I've looked at these insurance companies for months now. I bought Hartford here about 15 months ago after I talked to you guys, and it's up like 90%. I like insurance companies because no matter what happens, they always win. They seem to be having a problem with their margins, and I guess they've had a lot of claims filed and stuff like that. But it looks to me like, unless you're going to tell me different, it looks to me like it's a fundamentally good company that's having a bad day or week or month here, and I just wanted to see what your opinion was on it.
Well, Allstate is down about, let's see, from its 52-week high, down about 21%. And the insurance market has been struggling here over the past few months. And a lot of it has to do, I think, with the lack of breakout in rates. You know, it had a good rally last year and into the beginning of this year as rates continued higher. But now since rates peaked back in, let's see, when did they peak? The 10-year peaked really in April. Right around 1.75, almost 1.8. And we've just been in a broad trading range. So now the expectation of higher rates is not really there. And then also people are getting out and moving a lot more. What that means is more claims. When people were sitting on their couch and not driving very much, there weren't a lot of claims because there just wasn't a lot of movement and activity to cause accidents and for people to file claims. And so their profits really skyrocketed. And so in 2019, they made $10.43, but 2020, they made $14.71. And now you're starting to see the reversal. This year, it's supposed to make $13.41, down 9% from last year. And then next year, back to $10.77, down 20%. So they basically expect to make a full round trip to their 2019 earnings levels. And that's really the issue, is growth is slowing dramatically and reversing in a lot of ways. And so, you know, it's a good business. It's a good company. But, you know, the issue is just that return trip to pre-pandemic earnings levels and the fact that the market was discounting a more positive outlook longer term. And so that's why I would be patient on these names until we get a bigger breakout in rates. And I'm just really not quite seeing that yet. You know, if we get that, that's another story. But I think you'll have plenty of time to move if that's the case. So I would have it on my watch list. It's a very good company. But I just don't get excited with the technicals and the earnings backdrop that I'm seeing.
So back to the future, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Back to the future, back to where we were in 2019. I know we all probably want to be there anyway, but from an earnings standpoint, Allstate definitely doesn't, but that's where analysts are showing it is going to trend towards next year. Thanks for the call, James.
All right.
Now, the focus point today is based on the story behind this headline. CEOs and insiders have sold a record $69 billion of stock this year. Now, sales by insiders are up 30% from last year's levels and up 79% versus the 10-year average. And this is likely to only increase after December. Remember, this is just through the month of November. And December is usually a very active month because of tax planning, etc. Now, most of the stocks that have been sold were sold part of a pre-scheduled selling plan known as the 10B5-1 program. And the bulk of this year's sales have been highly concentrated among just a few sellers. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, they sold each nearly $10 billion in stock. And then you have the Waltons and Mark Zuckerberg, and you combine all four of those, that's 37% of the total. So very heavily weighted towards those highly valued giant companies and big investors, founders and CEOs that are really cashing in. And after the break, I'm going to get into what are the main reasons why this may not be as nefarious as you might think it is. There's some very good reasons. So after the break, I'm going to dig into that. But this is Invest Talk. And if you've never called, why not do it now? I'll be curious to hear your question. Our phone lines never close. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk is always made better when our listeners contribute their questions. So tell your friends and family members they can interact in real time with Steve Peasley and Justin Klein during the Invest Talk live stream program between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Or they can leave their questions anytime 24/7 in the Invest Talk voice bank. 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, I was discussing the massive amount of insider sales so far this year, and it was mainly driven by Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. So far this year, Elon has sold about $9.85 billion in Tesla stock, half of it related to option-related taxes, but the other half is straight out of cash out. So he's using this opportunity to say, okay, I'm selling shares. Oh, this is for paying taxes, but the other half is actually for straight cash out, which, you know, makes sense. Tesla, one of the most overvalued stocks in the history of the market right now, and it is definitely a good time to be cashing out. Jeff Bezos, he sold a total of $9.97 billion of Amazon stock this year, but that was part of its natural plan. You know, they file a, once again, a 10B5-1 plan. This is a scheduled plan consistently to sell shares over time. So that is not uncommon for people to diversify. And that's actually what Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella is saying with selling nearly half of his Microsoft stock for a total of $285 million. But in reality, it's probably because of a new tax starting next year in the state of Washington, where he lives, that will impose a 7% tax on capital gains over $250,000. So by selling this year versus next year, you can save up to $20 million in state taxes. And Bezos, same thing, saving up to $700 million in Washington state tax because he sold before the end of the year. So that's one reason. It's local taxes going up next year. But also the House is proposing a new 5% surtax on income over $10 million and 8% on income over $25 million. So that's another reason for the CEOs to lock in the gains now and avoid potentially larger tax bills next year and down the road. Now, obviously, the House bill is still under consideration. We're not sure exactly what that's going to look like, but the writing's kind of on the wall that for the uber, uber wealthy, those rates are likely to go up. So why not cash out right now when also valuations are very high for these big tech companies as well? So that's kind of the backstory. I don't think it's anything nefarious. I think it's really about decisions that I would make, whether I'm bullish on my company or not. Let's go to Noel in Napa looking at ExxonMobil.
Yes, hello, Justin. I've got a long-term capital gain in XOM. I've owned it a while, and got about a 30% gain right now in it. And you know, I was thinking about maybe I should sell it, take that long-term gain now with, you know, more. I'll have a lower tax rate this year, and God only knows what they're going to do next year. So, and then I was thinking about what you thought about moving those funds into natural gas, if that would be a better place to be anyhow. And if I go into natural, if you like the natural gas space better, do I want somebody that's just drilling for gas, or do I want somebody that does gas and also distribution and everything in that area?
Well, the first thing is we like Exxon. We own it for clients. And what you have to remember is Exxon is actually very heavily in oil, in natural gas. It produces 2.3 million barrels of liquids and 8.5 billion cubic feet of natural gas per day. So, and this is the product of their purchase of XTO Energy. Now, this was at poor prices, but they've been really utilizing that as a big source of revenue over the years. And it's really one of the larger E&P companies that has a large exposure to natural gas, higher than, say, a Chevron, for example. Now, there's others, ConocoPhillips, that also have large natural gas exposure as well. So that's, to me, if I'm looking for a larger, safe E&P company, Exxon's one of the better ones with good natural gas exposure. Now, could you get one that has a more pure play natural gas exposure? Absolutely. Exxon's very large. They're global. They have tons of oil and downstream. They're vertically integrated in a lot of ways, where they refine and manufacture chemicals and things like that as well. And that means that their overall profits tend to be better. And so, you know, if you're looking to gain more exposure to natural gas, Once again, there are better options that will have more upside, but this is definitely a safer play, a more consistent play, and I like the vertical integration there, where you're not really going to get that from very many companies that are heavily natural gas. Most companies that are heavily natural gas aren't vertically integrated. They don't own their pipelines. They're selling to pipeline infrastructure companies. And so, you know, if you're looking to lock in those capital gains, that's another question. That's another question from a tax perspective. That's something you want to talk to your CPA about. But I'm not in a huge hurry to be selling my Exxon, but it could make sense, part of a tax strategy. But that's something, once again, to talk to your CPA about. Now, in the next Invest Talk, a story that looks into this question. Are the NASDAQ and the Dow trading in a similar pattern to what was evident just before the internet bubble burst? Though recent divergences aren't as extreme as those seen in March 2000, there is a theory that postulates that they are nevertheless much higher than the norm. Steve will look into that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your questions live at 888-99-CHART.
Just wondering what your thoughts are on all the Robinhood trading and the Red Hat boards.
Got a question for Steve or Justin? Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I'm going to take a wild guess and say that many of you have heard about Shopify, but you may not know exactly what it is. Let me explain. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere. And it gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved exclusively for big business. Shopify can be easily customized for your needs with tools to manage your day-to-day operations and drive sales. It is user-friendly for both the business owner and the consumer. With Shopify, you can deploy a great-looking online store that brings your ideas to life. Simply put, you will love how Shopify makes it easy for you to successfully run your own business. Get this. Shopify powers over 1.7 million entrepreneurs from first sale to full scale. It opens up endless possibilities. Every 28 seconds, a small business owner makes their first sale on Shopify. Shopify has thousands of integrations and third-party apps. You can start by building and customizing your online store, and you need no coding or design experience. Plus, with 24/7 support, you're never alone. So discover inspiration. Go to shopify.com/invest, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Start selling on Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/invest right now. shopify.com/invest.
This is Invest Talk. Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Is it delivering the types of gains you want and need to achieve financial freedom? Well, turn up the volume, because there are many questions that deserve unbiased answers. And Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my name is Paige. I'm calling from Sunnyvale, California. I don't recall hearing anyone ever ask about carbon credit funds, but that's come to my attention. And so I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what you think about those kinds of funds and how to evaluate them. I did find an article that mentioned three ETFs and an exchange traded note. One of those was KRBN, Crane Shares Global Carbon ETF. Another was KCCA, Crane Shares California Carbon Allowance ETF, KEUA, Crane Shares European Carbon Allowance ETF, and then the exchange-traded note was IPATH Series B Carbon ETN. Anyway, just love to start a discussion about this kind of investing, as I don't recall hearing much about it on your show, which I listen to faithfully. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All right. Looking at a few of these carbon credit ETFs and ETNs, and these are definitely interesting. And I like this space overall, because you continue to see a push towards green energy, and the cost of carbon credits continues to go up. And what I like are the companies actually that produce the carbon credits overall, that are building green infrastructure and then able to sell those carbon credits. So they're making money not only on the green infrastructure that they're building and investing in, but they are also able to sell the carbon credits to those that are polluting. And so I like that, but I like the underlying companies once again. And there are plenty of them out there. There are some infrastructure companies. I can't give you the exact names. You have to do your own research. Once again, you can call and ask me about them if you ever find one. We own some for our clients as well. And so that's what you want to be looking for, in my mind, and less to do with those ETFs, you know, the GRNs and the KRBNs of the world. I don't think they're bad, but I rather own those companies that pay a dividend and are creating the carbon credits as they operate. And so that's the way I would go. But thanks for the call, and great topic to bring up. More people should be focused on this, because I think the trend is only going to continue. Now let's go to Bruce in Millbrae, looking at HMC, which I believe, if I remember correctly, is Honda Motor Corporation. You own it or looking to buy it?
Just looking at it. Was wondering if you have any, is it, they don't say, it doesn't ever seem to do much, but it pays a big dividend, and is it secure, and is it ever valued that you guys would buy it?
Well, every company has a value where it's just too cheap, and you want to own it at those levels. Now, the question is now the price after a drop from about 15% from its 52-week high? And I'm going to say really not yet. Part of it is the stock continues to weaken technically, although today was a nice little bounce, but remains below all the major moving averages. And then you're seeing a lot of tailwinds that were given to this company during the pandemic are starting to reverse. Pre-pandemic, they're making $2.42. Last year, $3.44. This year, supposed to make $3.36 per share. So you're starting to see that retrenchment once again. Analysts are downgrading estimates overall. They don't pay a dividend. And just like I say with the EV companies, even though this one isn't heavily EV, they have some exposure there, obviously, but it is a very low margin, difficult business. And if you just look at the return on equity over the years, it has kind of fluctuated between 4% and the mid-teens, but averaged right around 8% over the last couple of decades, which is okay, but that doesn't get me excited. And I think that's why the price of the stock hasn't really gone very far over the last decade. It's just basically where it was a decade ago. So I don't really like those trends. I don't see them being a leader in transitioning into the EV space. And so I wouldn't be chasing this stock. And I'm looking at, let's see, the dividend. Did they cut their dividend? Because I'm not seeing. Yeah, one system's telling me they don't pay a dividend. Another is saying the dividend yield is about 5%. So I'm gonna trust the other one about 5%. So I wouldn't be chasing that dividend yield. It's just not a name that I'm getting excited about. Thanks for the call, Bruce. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Is the brick-and-mortar store back in style? Well, retailers this year are expected to open more stores than they actually close. And this is the first time that will happen since 2017. This is an analysis of 900 different chains. Now, most of the growth is coming from food stores, drug stores, convenience stores, mass merchant stores, but department stores, especially retailers, that continues to they continue to close more stores than they're opening. But the pace that they're closing stores has slowed from record levels last year, which you would imagine. You know, last year was a very big year for closing brick and mortar stores. Now, stores are becoming more important in the whole e-commerce landscape, because for many companies, they're actually fulfilling their store or their e-commerce orders from their stores. They're using them as distribution hubs. And employees can double by at one point checking people out at the front, but the next time maybe packing boxes and shipping them out in the back. And then it's convenient for shoppers to also return their products directly to the physical store. So that can be beneficial and drive more traffic online. And then you have the really increasing costs of acquiring customers online, as so many retailers have pivoted. Basically, every retailer has pivoted aggressively to online stores because they had to. But as that cost has gone up, it's become less expensive to get shoppers in store. It used to be, well, the cost of getting new shoppers online was a lot lower than the overhead cost of paying for rent and all the employees and insurance, etc., that comes with a brick and mortar store. But now, since the pandemic, the costs online have gone up and landlords are becoming more flexible, shorter lease terms, more flexible lease terms. And means these retailers are more apt to take a chance on an area because they're less likely to be locked up in unproductive locations for a decade plus, which is kind of what the standard was before when these retailers signed a lease. They were there for a decade. Now, many of these stores are smaller, and a lot of them are also offering experiences. Dick's, for example, is adding 800 stores. That includes a House of Sports, Public Lands, Golf Galaxy stores. These all have interactive features: batting cages, rock climbing walls, putting greens. So things that people can do in a store that you can never do online. Levi's, another one that's opening 100 new next generation stores where you can buy customized t-shirts by adding patches, embroidery, colored rivets, etc. And I've also seen rents down 15% from pre-pandemic levels. And that's improved overall profitability, says the Levi's CEO. Now, foot traffic is still down about 12.4% at the week ending November 20th from 2 years ago, so pre-pandemic levels. But once again, the cost of digital acquisition, acquiring a customer online, is up 50% over the past 5 years. So the costs are going up dramatically. And Amazon already has physical stores. They're planning to open up department stores where shoppers can try and close using dressing rooms with a lot of technology in them to help them. Warby Parker, they're opening 154 stores. Sorry, they currently have 154 stores. They're opening 35 more new locations this year. They started online and have been pivoting more and more to physical stores. Now, department stores and specialty retailers are on track to close 469 more stores than they opened this year, but that's down from a net 6,787 net closures last year. So less than 10% of the net closures from last year. So that's a big, big improvement. And once again, it's able to complement the e-commerce side. Target says the cost on average of fulfilling an online order through its retail outlets is 40% less than shipping from its expensive warehouses or warehouses that may be farther away. And so the old story that maybe physical stores are dead, maybe at least ebbing for a while. And I think there's still some longer term headwinds and brick and mortar retail is likely to shift and transform. But there's a lot of data that's saying we're starting to go the other way. We've reached an inflection point on that side. Now let's swing back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier from New Hampshire.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Steve Oger calling from New Hampshire. Hope all is well. Just a real quick question for you. I am investing currently in my 401k with the Roth component as well as individual Roth IRA. Dawning on me now, what happens to my contribution amount if I'm contributing the max in my regular, I guess, individual Roth IRA, but also contributing in my 401k? I would imagine it would be separate, but I just want to confirm that I'm not doing something I shouldn't be. I really appreciate the information, and I look forward to the answer on the podcast. Thanks.
Yes, they are separate. The Roth 401k is similar to the traditional 401k when it comes to limits. And then your IRA, whether it's a Roth or traditional, is also separate. So now your Roth is going to have some contribution limits. Obviously contribution limits, but income limits, excuse me, where it's phased out on your ability to contribute to the Roth IRA. But that's something that you have to consider. And obviously, I don't know your income limits, something to talk to your CPA about. And remember, with all these contributions to retirement accounts, it's always in context to your own personal situation, your tax situation. And you always want to consult with a tax professional because your situation is siloed. Nobody has your exact situation when it comes to income, place you're living, demands, et cetera, and goals. Okay. So thanks for the call and great question. Let's go to Edgar in San Diego looking at Western Union.
Yes, hi, Justin. How are you?
Good, good.
Yes, I was looking at Western Union and pretty much I'm looking for dividend and I was wondering what you think about this company.
Well, I think the company is cheap. Now, whether or not the dividend is going to be sustainable longer term, I'm not sure about that. What I am more interested in is the fact that they are still producing a lot of cash flow and their stock is very cheap. Their operating earning yield right now is 14.6% and they're buying back shares aggressively. So this is a name that its business is dying, but it's dying a slow death. And it may be a decade plus before it's officially dead. And they're about to earn over the next few years, call it 5 to 6 years, their entire market cap. And if they can plow their $300 million in free cash flow every quarter into stock buybacks, well, they're going to buy the whole company. Oh, geez. Yeah, in about 5 years. Okay, so that's a good thing. And that's why I think it's relatively cheap. Now, is this a dividend play in my mind? Not really, because I don't think that dividend is likely to be sustained longer term. In the near term, I think it's definitely going to be fine, but they're going to be focusing more on buybacks and using that cash flow for that. So I don't think you're going to get dividend growth. It's probably going to be flat for a little while. And really, this is more of a value play and playing on the company simply basically taking itself private. Thanks for the call. Let's try one more quick question.
Hi, I'm calling about Matterport MTTR. I first got it around $15, and now I'm wondering if I should be looking to buy more. If so, what price, or should I be looking to sell and take profits? Thanks.
All right, Matterport. I haven't heard of this one. Provides a 3D data platform to design, build, promote, and manage homes, offices, hotels, factories, and shops. Interesting. I've never heard of this one. A spatial data company focusing on digitizing and indexing The Built World. I've never heard of this name. $7 billion market cap. Its revenue is up 10% year over year. Ooh, doesn't make any money. This looks like a Ponzi stock to me. Trading at $7 billion market cap. Enterprise value. Run rate of $100 million in revenue. Losing money. I wouldn't be owning this name. Okay, so this is a weird one. This looks like to be, was a SPAC? Yeah, looks like to be a SPAC. Now, technically, it's fine. It's above all the major moving averages. Big reversal yesterday and a follow-through today. So that is some definitely near-term bearish signs. But overall, I just don't understand this company quite yet. Once again, it's a SPAC. So a lot of the data on SPACs is comes in over time. It's not like a normal IPO, and you really only have data for 2020, losing 29 cents. Let's lose 23 cents this year, 26 cents next year. I don't know enough about it. I don't really understand its business, but technically it's fine. But based on what I'm seeing, market cap, revenue, et cetera, it looks extremely expensive. So I would be wary about buying more. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here, is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And we're going into our final break. And we're here to help you. Whatever is on your mind, finance or money related, we're happy to discuss it, give you some perspective, give you some data to make good money decisions. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
You are listening to Invest Talk. Every Friday on the program and the podcast, Steve Peasley shares highlights from the newest edition of the KPP Premium Newsletter. Listen Fridays to Invest Talk. And now, Steve and Justin welcome your calls and questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve or Justin. This is Bob from Ohio. The market's, you know, and really in the middle of a bubble recently, and I, you know, can see a downturn coming. So what's the best way to gain exposure to the downside of the market without physically shorting the stock? Would you recommend, like, selling calls, or would you recommend buying puts or buying an inverse ETF? What do you recommend? I'm a fairly new investor, so I appreciate it. Your show's great. I listen to it every day. Thank you very much.
Well, if you are looking to capture the downside of the market and you're a fairly new investor, I think the simplest way is to buy a single levered, not the levered inverse ETFs, but the single levered ETFs where you're just going to get the inverse of whatever the market is going to do. So if the market's going to go down, then this is going to go up. And there are ones tracking the S&P and the NASDAQ and the Russell and many other of the large indices. So that's what I would go with. Options as a beginning investor, too risky. You really have to understand the ins and outs for you to be successful. If you were to do it, it'd be probably buying just straight up puts. I wouldn't sell calls, especially in this market with gamma squeezes and all that. But buying a put and limiting your risk would probably be the next best thing. But as a new investor, that's probably not the way that you should go. Okay. So hope that helped. Now let's touch on a report from the OECD. This is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And this is their latest forecast. This is the fourth report this year on the economic outlook, as well as looking into next year into 2023. And they expect consumer price inflation here in the U.S. to average 4.4% in 2022. That's up from 3.1% the last time they released their forecast in September. They expect the Eurozone to be at 2.7% when it comes to inflation. That's up from 1.9% in their last forecast. So this is what I speak about when I talk about inflation moderating next year. Moderating. This year, we're going to have average inflation probably north of 5%. And a 4.4% increase in prices next year would be considered a moderation. But it is much elevated from what the market and the economy is used to. So if we have back-to-back years of north of 4% inflation, that is something you haven't seen in decades. And I think would have a large impact on the psyche of the market and the economy as a whole. And so this report is basically saying that inflation will be longer lasting and sharper than they previously expected. And I think most people previously expected, including the Federal Reserve, who Jerome Powell already spoke about, that transitory needs to be retired because basically saying it is not transitory. And so even though their target is 2 to 2.5%, they're expected, once again, to have inflation above that level for the foreseeable future. Now they look at a series of imbalances in demand for and supply of energy, semiconductors, and other goods being the main driver, as well as workers. And I think that's really where the rubber will meet the road when it comes to inflation. And that is on the worker side. It's easy to kind of catch up on orders, bring on, I wouldn't say easy, it's easier to catch up on orders, bring on new capacity, and get the supply-demand dynamics of physical goods back in line. But that's much more difficult when it comes to workers. If you're a company, you can't just print up workers. You have to go find them. And as more and more people have retired, others have gotten long COVID, others have unfortunately passed away, others are taking care of people with COVID. Maybe they have young kids who are not back in school. There's a lot of factors that are driving a dearth of workers. A lot of immigration as well. Since 2016, our trend in immigration has sharply decelerated, which means a lot less workers here in the U.S. And so all of those factors, to me, are going to be the main drivers. The workers, the lack of workers, are the main drivers of inflation for the foreseeable future. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, now over 36 million. You can get yours for free anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, and be sure to rate and review. If you leave your question within your review, we will prioritize your answer. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. They thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.